Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are joined by Stampy. He is a pretty big YouTube star. If you don't know about him, your kids probably do, or someone else's kids. All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 164, recorded Thursday, May 29th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Harry's. For guys or gals who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code SOCIALHOUR when you check out. And by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus free 3-day shipping on your final frame purchase, go to warbyparker.com/socialhour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. This is a very exciting one, but before we get to that, we'll introduce ourselves. I'm Sarah Lane from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, back at home. I guess I've been home for about a week. I was in Chicago last week, some travel coming up, but it's always nice to be in my little studio, Sarah, where I can control things. It's always a good feeling.
Well, your studio always looks really good. I know that you take your lighting very seriously. So, you know, considering that you can't be here in person week after week, you look pretty darn good to me.
It's the next best thing, right, Sarah?
Exactly. So, Amber, I want you to set us up for our interview today because this is someone who I have become familiar with quite recently, but someone that is part of your household quite often.
Yes. A few months ago, my son started watching YouTube videos of people playing Minecraft, which is not quite a big surprise because he was playing Minecraft for a few months and he just wanted to get into the YouTube videos and learn more about how to play and things that he could build. And he discovered a guy named Stampy. So he started watching Stampy literally, you know, it was like once a day. Now it's twice a day. And now it's nonstop Stampy in our house. Literally, we have become very close with Stampy from afar, which I know sounds kind of creepy, but nonetheless, we're not the only ones. Turns out there are millions and millions of others, particularly children who watch Stampy all the time to learn how to do different things in Minecraft and really experience Minecraft in a different way. And we are so excited to have Stampy on the show today from England, who will be joining us to talk about how he built up his community on YouTube.
It's Stampy, aka Joseph Garrett. Hello.
Hi, nice to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you too. This is very exciting because once Amber said, listen, this is really big YouTube star, this is a big deal. I said, okay, well, let me get up to speed. And you've got, we're close to 3 million subscribers on YouTube and over a billion views on your videos. And you put out a new video every day, isn't that right?
Yeah, I do a Minecraft video every day, but then I also do other videos sort of in between that as well. So at least one video every day, at least.
Okay, go ahead, Amber.
No, I was just going to say it's pretty amazing even just putting out a video every day. We know how challenging that is and how much work that takes.
Yeah, and it's not even that. It's not even the recording and editing. It's just the ideas. I mean, I don't know how much you know about Minecraft, but, you know, there's no story. I'm not just... Like, I'm playing a video game, but I'm not just playing through a game. It's coming up with ideas and coming up with stories just within Minecraft. And that's where all the time goes into.
We actually have a show here on our network, on the Twit Network, that's about Minecraft that one of our colleagues, Chad, puts together. And hanging out with him and just hearing about all of the time that he spends in his Minecraft universe week after week, I realize how much... If you are interested in Minecraft, it really does kind of become your world if you want it to be. How do you decide to put together a video? I mean, is there a certain storyline that you feel like you think of a week out, or is it just kind of you're winging it?
It's a cool mixture of winging it and having things planned. So say I do a 20-minute episode, so it's kind of long-form content. I'll have an idea of what I'm going to do, and there might be a pre-planned thing. Like I might have, like, I got a villain. And like every now and then he will attack me, and that would be a planned thing. But in terms of the commentary and like everything I'm saying, that's all non-scripted. So it's kind of live reaction to semi-planned episodes. So if I'm bursting out laughing or if I'm scared, that's because I'm actually scared. That's not written down anywhere. So it's kind of live reactions to like kind of half set up scenarios, which I think is why it's been able to be so popular, because you compare that to like a cartoon where it's sort of scripted to the T, and it might, you know, it might hit some certain beats more efficiently than my videos, but there's no replacement for a live, real human reaction. And that, I think that is why it's become so popular.
Let's go back to the beginning in terms of when you started doing these videos. Can you talk about maybe the first few weeks of creating these and when you knew that you had kind of hit that tipping point when you had a mass audience that was being built?
Well, I used to do non-Minecraft videos, still gaming stuff, but more journalistic videos, like critique videos. I did reviews. I used to run a tournament and did guides on all sorts of games, you know, M-rated games, shooters, just whatever. I was trying to get into the gaming journalism industry, like to do with video. And I did that for years, and it took up all of my time and no one watched, and I got nothing from it. And then because that took up too much time while I was at uni, for fun, I did Let's Play videos where it is live commentary as you're playing. And that was just about when Minecraft came out on the Xbox. And so I started doing Minecraft, and, you know, within the first few months, I realized like, whoa, people are suddenly watching now. And so after about, I'd say about 5 months of doing Minecraft videos, I realized like, right, this is something, you know, the speed this is growing, there's an opportunity here. So that's when I quit my job and I just went full force into doing this and trying to grow something.
You seem like you're, you know, a pretty jovial guy. It seems like a pretty fun job, but you're doing a video for Minecraft once a day and then other projects on top of that. It's to be able to quit your job and say, okay, I can just do this full time. That's sort of everyone's dream, but is it a grind?
Yeah, big time. It's still fun. Like, if you don't enjoy doing it, then it's the worst job in the world because it takes up all your time. You know, it's not a fun, easy job that you can just do in your bedroom. You know, it takes up all of your time. And, you know, the fact that I'm doing it as a job now has taken away a bit of the fun. But if I compare that to any other job, I really struggle to think of anything else I'd rather be doing right now. And it's just open doors. Like, from this, I now have an established character called Stampy Cat, which I can push into other avenues on different platforms. Like, I've got an engaged audience and, you know, a fan base, which, you know, I can use to my advantage. And, you know, it's like, it's opened a lot of doors. I've basically just skipped out a lot of the legwork and getting into, you know, the video industry, essentially.
What really amazes me is that even right now, we just had a tweet from a little girl on Twitter. Her name's Emily. She's 5 years old. She sent us a picture. She's watching the show right now. And what I think is so interesting is that you've really been able to capture a young audience. And I mean, I think that's something that people have had a difficult time doing on YouTube, but you were able to do it. And what do you think it is? I mean, did you plan to be able to attract this younger audience, or did it just really just happen?
No, it was completely an accident. I mean, I think I've always been a bit of a big kid. Like, I mean, you can probably see some toys in the background and stuff, whatever. Like, I think that has helped. But as I said, when I started, I was doing all sorts of shooter games, you know, like very serious, dull. Like, I was talking about the gaming industry. You know, I wasn't trying to make videos for kids, but just when I started playing Minecraft, like, I still wasn't trying to make videos for kids, but I guess just that kind of setting, just, I don't know, I got excited very easily, and I think that appealed to kids. And even now, when I know that kids are watching and I'm kind of conscious of that, I still don't think I changed too much. You know, like, I speak with a bit energy, I'm a bit more joyful than I would be like just speaking now, but like, I don't patronize, I don't try and speak to kids in kiddie language. And I think kids like that. Like, I'm like a friend to them, I'm on their level. So I might use long words that you wouldn't see on a Saturday morning cartoon, but I mean, the kids have got to learn it at some point. Like, they don't want to shy away from that, and I think that's really helped.
Besides the fact that it's daily content, and so obviously you've got kids and people of all ages that are excited and they know that they're going to hear from you, do you think that there's something to the, hey, there's a person in a, you know, not a television studio setting putting these videos together and organically riffing off the cuff somewhat, that appeals to people even if they don't realize it, as opposed to watching a daily show?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more personal. I think especially with TV, that's the box that is sitting in the corner of the room and it's just always streaming content and it's kind of just a passive viewing experience. Like, there's a TV presenter man. With YouTube, it's a person, and it's a person you can identify with. They can immediately comment and they might get a reply or like tweet me or Facebook me. Like, I think it just makes it seem more real. And even just viewing it on a computer screen or more likely a tablet. Like, I've got 47% of my audience watches on a mobile device. And that's 47%, which is crazy. You know, that's even for YouTube, that is a lot, you know, to have almost half of your views. And I think just them lying in bed or whatever with a tablet and just having it on that screen rather than a TV screen is massive. I think that does, you know, just the platform makes a huge difference.
And before we get to some questions that we had sent in, including a video from one of your fans, just curious about how you're going to take your YouTube presence and integrate it into future projects. Because I read everything from you working on a project with Jack Black to you doing something called Stampy School. Where do you take this? Where do you go from here?
Yeah, so I mean, I've got another channel which I'm launching with a company called Maker Studios, who are just acquired by Disney, and that's going to be called WonderQuest, which is still... I mean, it's still a YouTube channel, but it's going to be all educational content. So that is the biggest thing I'm working on at the moment. Well, the thing that is closest to going live. I don't have a date yet, but that will be soon. I'm doing a kind of a one-off thing with Jack Black, which is a show called Meet Me at the Rec, which is coming out in September. I mean, that's kind of a one-off. And there's other things in the works, which I can't announce now, which is using the Stampy Cat character, but outside of Minecraft.
Wow.
And I wish I could announce it now, but it's a big thing, which I can say. It's out of YouTube, possibly out of the online space. And stay tuned for that.
I guess last question for me, too, before we get to other people's questions. And really, it's pretty fascinating how many people are tweeting me right now saying, my kid is freaking out. I love Stampy so much. But I guess, you know, you're in this echelon of YouTube stars that most people, you know, could only dream of getting to. You have such a big following, so many views. How long did it take before the people at YouTube to contact you and say, hey, you're a pretty big deal. We want to pay more attention to you than we do to the average person who has an account?
They haven't. They've not reached out to me yet. So I've never spoken to anyone from YouTube at all. So
never.
That's not happened yet. I mean, there's like an automated, like they send you like a plaque. Like, I got one for 100,000 subscribers. You're supposed to get one for 1 million as well. I've not got it yet. But no, I've never spoke to anyone from YouTube.
That really surprises me.
But I mean, I've got, there's things called, I'm sure you're very aware of it, called MCNs, multi-channel networks.
Sure.
who you partner with, and they're kind of my contact. So if there is any other a copyright issue or something I need to speak to at YouTube, it's not going to be me, you know, calling up Google to say sort this out. Like, it goes through them. So there's not been much of a need for me to. But I mean, no, I mean, they've never reached out to me for anything.
Well, I guess you have enough other people who are paying attention that the opportunities are kind of presenting themselves anyway.
Definitely. So, okay, so let's start with an email that we had. This one is from Teresa, who says, I asked my six-year-old this morning, his name is Gavin, if he could ask Stampy a question and what it would be. And he said, would you ever want to talk about Skylanders? He and all the boys on the lacrosse team love Stampy, and they can't wait to watch the interview. So they're just wondering if you'll ever talk about Skylanders during an episode, I guess.
Well, I do something. There's a game kind of similar to that. Skylanders, I don't know if you know, it's a game where you have like physical toys that you place them down on a disc and they appear in the game. And I've not done Skylanders, but I've done a game called Disney Infinity. And you can see kind of over my head, there's a load of Disney characters. They're actually part of the game. And so when you place them down on a disc, they appear in the game. So I don't plan to do any Skylanders stuff, but that's kind of similar, Disney Infinity.
I didn't even know what's going on. I'm learning so much. Skylanders, physical things on a disc. Awesome. Let's talk about this video that Leslie actually sent in. This is a video that she took of her son, Brady, who also has a question.
Hey, Stampy, it's Brady. How did you make such a big house in Minecraft?
Got a big house. How'd you do it?
I spent 2 years building it. I've been building my house in Minecraft for over 2 years doing... Yeah, several episodes a week. So a lot of time is how I managed to build my house so big. And help from my friends.
Amazing. We have a tweet from Paul in Ottawa, whose kids, Jacob and Zach, would love to know, what was your inspiration for your YouTube channel and how can kids follow your lead?
I just watched a lot of other YouTubers before I did it. I mean, as I said, I was doing YouTube for years before Minecraft came out, so I wasn't inspired by any Minecraft people. And I get asked a lot about, like, should I start a channel or how should I do it? And I always say that if you're contemplating doing it, then just do it, because you're probably going to end up enjoying it. And don't make a channel and suddenly expect to get thousands of people watching. Do it because you enjoy it, because really that's pretty much all you're going to get out of it, you know, even if it does become a career. As I said earlier, if you're not enjoying it, then you're not getting anything out of it anyway. So if you think you're going to have fun doing it, then do it.
What do you think of the sort of phenomenon? I know what you do is a little bit different than this, but the phenomenon of people watching other people playing games and then listening to their commentary. It's kind of become this thing. The network Twitch is sort of part of that whole thing. And it's been hard for me to wrap my head around, but it is so, so popular.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, as I said earlier, it's just seeing someone having fun, seeing someone playing a game and just being so joyous about it, or any type of emotion, seeing someone play through a horror game and get scared, like, that's compelling for some reason. And you know, you look at the people at the top, like PewDiePie, he's just a stand-up comedian. Instead of being on a stage, he's using these games. It doesn't matter what he's playing, he could be playing anything, but it's just, he is just a comedian and people find him funny, and he's just using that as a platform. And I mean, for me, using Minecraft, because it is so open and it's such a sandbox, it's basically just a way for me to cheaply make, you know, cartoons that, you know, very low budget. I can come up with an idea, I can go and record it, I can go and edit it and upload it, and there's no other way for me to do that. If it was live action or animation, that just simply wouldn't be possible. So this is Minecraft, or games similar to Minecraft, is the only platform I could use to do what I do. So that's why I do it.
We do have another tweet, and this is a question from Jody, who's 10, and Seth, who is 6, who ask, what is your favorite cake in real life?
Ooh, it's got to be chocolate. I'm a big chocolate guy, so chocolate cake, I reckon.
Such great questions.
Minecraft thing is, we've got this Minecraft show here at Twit, and so I've learned a lot about that kind of, that deconstructed, it's very, I don't even know how people who play Minecraft really describe the look and the feel of it, but it's kind of got that, you know, building blocks and retro type of a thing. I mean, do you find that even if you weren't sharing what you're doing with the world, does that appeal to you more than a very well designed kind of flashy game that we see now, where you almost can't really tell computer generated reality from real reality?
I mean, the big thing about it being the graphics being as simple as they are is that it can run on almost anything. Like, you can play it on your phone, like the old Xboxes or anything. But I mean, there's so many different art styles with game. Like, I think a lot of people that don't play games regularly and only see, like, trailers on TV, they just see the new Call of Duty or GTA, which is really high-end, you know, high-fidelity graphics that are trying to be realistic. But, I mean, if you're playing games every day and lots of indie games, there's so many different art styles, like, even more simple or pixelated than Minecraft, or, like, to look like a cartoon, have it cel-shaded. Like, there's just so many different art styles, and if you're playing games all the time, you just see that. And so when you see Minecraft, it doesn't stand out as much. It's like, oh, that's the look they've gone for. But I mean, if you're not playing games and you are only used to seeing those, like, high-end games, they look at it like, oh, why are they playing this game? It looks like a game from the 90s. But I think for most people that play Minecraft, don't even think about the graphics. That doesn't, like, they don't care. Like, that's not an issue.
I just have one other question, and this is kind of based on a tweet that we just got in from Leslie, who just is thanking us for answering her kid's question and says that her child's mind is blown. And this is the type of language I hear all the time if I mention you to any kids who play Minecraft and who watch your videos. And I'm just curious, I mean, what does this mean to you on a daily basis, knowing that you're impacting an entire generation of kids? I mean, we're not talking about a few thousand kids. We're talking about millions of kids who turn to you. I mean, that's a bit of pressure, but it's also exciting too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive pressure, and, you know, it's a very vocal audience. You know, if they don't like something, then I'm going to hear about it from many people. But, I mean, it's amazing. It's incredible. And sometimes it's hard because, you know, I'm spending half my time in my room and you can see a big number, but that doesn't mean much. But it's when I go to conventions, or, you know, if I get recognized on the street and, like, I can see a kid, like, you know, they run up to you and they, you know, they're excited just because you're there. Just to see a person excited because you're in the room is just a crazy experience, or like a crowd waiting to take a picture of you. It's, you know, I mean, it's so touching. And that's the sort of thing that, like, I wasn't prepared for. Like, I'm not an extrovert, I'm an introvert. And the reason I did this kind of performing is because I can hide behind a microphone in my room. And then suddenly it got to a point where I couldn't do that anymore. And, you know, I mean, the thing I love more than anything is meeting people in person, because to them, you're a friend. You know, it's like you were saying, it's, you become part of their household. You're part of their daily routine. They hear your voice. They know what you've been up to last week. They run up to me and say, oh, that thing that you built last week, and they know everything about me. And it's, there's, I mean, there's some people that are shy, but most people are just so open to me and just, you know, just as if they have known me for years. And, you know, which is kind of weird for me because, you know, I don't know who they are and I've got to try and sort of keep up. But I mean, it's an amazing feeling, and it's the biggest motivator more than anything else.
Well, it sounds like you have, obviously, you've achieved a lot of success. You've got projects in the works, some that you can talk about, some that you can't, but suffice to say, you're really busy. I guess last question for me, and this is kind of piggybacking off of Amber's last question. Do you ever worry that the fact that you are so known as a particular character, even though you do really come across pretty much the same, so it's not as if you're putting on so much of some fake character, but do you ever worry about separating that from what little time you have for your personal life?
Well, what do you mean? So, as in, like...
Well, you say, you know, somebody might recognize you on the street, and you weren't prepared for that because you're used to, you know, sitting in a room and being able to put stuff on the internet. As you go forward and your popularity continues to grow, do you ever wonder, well, can I go back to just being Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, it's not been too bad. Like, it's not as bad as you might think, because in my videos, you never see me. You know, that I don't have, like, a face cam, that I don't do any live action stuff on my main channel. So, you know, the vast majority of people still don't know what I look like. And it's only, you know, through things like this where people do find out what I look like. So day to day, I'm very much not disturbed. And all of the projects I have in the works, you know, it's not really any big live action stuff. So, like, I can kind of stay like that. So I get kind of a nice mix of Stampy Cat is very famous, but, like, me, Joe, isn't. So, like, I'm trying to keep that for as long as I can. I know, you know, to a certain extent, like, I do have to try and be, you know, I got to be very careful and make sure my address doesn't ever get out, because, you know, people would be showing up at the door. So it is a bit of a worry, but at the moment, like, as things are now, it hasn't been an issue yet.
Well, Paula on Twitter says that her daughter Emily says that PewDiePie uses bad words, and thank you for keeping it clean.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining us today. And I know I can speak for many parents and people who watch you on a regular basis. It's not just parents and kids, but definitely lots of fun, and good luck in the future, because it feels like things are just starting to really take off for you, and there's going to be a lot in store in the next few months.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. So nice to meet you.
You too. Bye.
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 You know, I have a feeling that Chad Johnson, who does our Minecraft show, OMG Chad, is going to be like, what were you talking to Stampy for? They really kind of remind me of each other. They've both got this, like, young, happy, you know, enthusiastic thing going on. But, yeah, that's incredible. And... you know, how fun for him that he found this little, you know, really sort of this very niche way of sharing stuff with the world that has exploded. And, you know, everything from the fact that he didn't necessarily go for this younger age group, certainly not the numbers. I mean, billions of views. That's intense. That is an intense YouTube sensation.
It is. I mean, and if you even read the story of Minecraft and how Minecraft was created, and then you think about the story of Stampy, I mean, what I'm always attracted to is the fact that all of this stuff really happened very organically. I mean, there was no giant machine or corporation behind these individuals kind of pumping money into these games and Stampy's YouTube channel to make them a success, but it really grew organically. And I don't think you can say that for a lot of the games and technologies and social networks that are popular today, but for Minecraft, Minecraft, and Stampy, it seems like it is definitely something that has been grown just because there are so many fans who love participating in the entire process. So it's a great story and super fun to have him on.
And I think there's something really special about the kid part of it, because you know, we do a show that's for all ages, certainly, but I think that we sort of assume that who the people that are watching and listening in the social hour are our peers, you know, that's sort of the general age group kind of a thing. And the little ones are the ones that, I mean, they really want you to be part of their day. I mean, they're very loyal, and that is a very it's a very powerful kind of audience to have. And I know a lot of people say, I don't write children's books, or I don't know how to make videos for kids, but for the people who do and do it well, that really is that's a very particular and unique and powerful talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fickle audience. I personally would not want a 6-year-old getting upset with me. I don't know about you, Sarah.
No, that's why I am afraid of them, actually, Amber, you never know what the kids are going to do. But no, that was great. All right, so we've got some news to get to on the show. We've got stuff beyond Stampy. But first, let's take a moment to thank. This is a new advertiser for us, Amber. This is Harry's, an innovative company that's disrupting an industry that, well, I certainly have to be a part of, and that is shaving. Not my face, necessarily. If you're a guy, maybe it's your face. If you're a lady, maybe you want to shave your legs. It's razors. It's razors. Here's the problem with razors is not only do you have to be gentle with them, of course, because they can be dangerous weapons, but they're really expensive. I mean, getting, like, a nice, decent razor at the store, and then you've got to get little inserts, and there's stuff to throw away, it's just a mess. For years, people have had really poor experiences getting razors, $4 per razor for, you know, Procter & Gamble's Gillette Fusion. That's just crazy. It's a razor. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. Razors are so expensive that, at least in the drugstores in my neighborhood, they lock them all up. You have like, get somebody to help you because people steal razors because they're expensive. It doesn't really make any sense. That's what Harry's is trying to change. Founded about almost a year ago by two guys, Andy and Jeff, who obviously have to use razors, and they were like, listen, let's get people a great shaving experience, but only make them pay a fraction of the price of the razor blades that they're going to see in stores, you know, like Gillette. They have a very clean product design. In fact, it's probably the nicest razor website you'll ever see. Kind of, you know, less is more. High quality blades engineered from a factory in Germany. They're sharp, they're strong, and there's the convenience and ease of ordering online. I mean, who's having fun picking up razors on a regular basis? Nobody. I mean, why not just get these delivered to your house? Jeff, one of the co-founders, also co-founded Warby Parker. This kind of might sound familiar to you. Yeah, it's the same idea. It's, hey, this industry seems to have this really, really expensive product, and it's been marked up, and we're all just accepting it, but we don't have to. Why don't we all just pay less for still good quality? You know, this is all just in time for Father's Day, too. We're kind of ramping up to that. Harry's designed a limited edition father-son shave set for Father's Day. So this is kind of, this is, you know, why we're talking about it today. It's never too early to learn to shave with Dad. Amber, this might be something that you'd be interested in. The set comes with a chrome razor for Dad and then a child-size razor toy. It's a, you know, it's not actually a razor for a kid, but it's a razor toy, kind of for fun. A shave guide written in the style of a children's storybook. And, you know, you make the gift personal. You can engrave the handles with the initials. That's adorable. I mean, talk about a photo op. Pricing is reasonable for a gift. It's $30 for the set. It's $45 if you want to go with the engraving. And it launched on May 27th on harrys.com. So it's just a couple days old. And there's free shipping guaranteed for Father's Day. That's through June 4th. So if you get on it now, you've got expedited shipping available through June 11th. If this all sounds good, it's gift time, you know. This is definitely an innovative gift. Father's Day can be tough for people, I know. Go to harrys.com, that's HARRYS.com, and use the promo code SOCIALHOUR, and you'll get $5 off your first purchase. So harrys.com, promo code SOCIALHOUR, and we thank Harry's for their support.
Ugh, love it.
I hate shopping for expensive razors. As soon as Harry's came on the scene, I was like, oh, okay, you don't have to convince me.
But the father and son set is the perfect gift.
Isn't that cute?
That's super cute.
I think so.
Love it.
So, Amber, did you go through all 146 of Mary Meeker's slides from yesterday, her annual Internet Trends report that she presented at the Code conference put on by the website Recode? I didn't either. Not all of them. But I did get some pretty interesting tidbits.
Yeah, it's so fun just to flip through all of the slides, and we'll have this link in our show notes just to get a sense of an update of internet trends that are happening today at a global level. I mean, I flipped right into slide 15 when they started talking about social media and social news content leaders and talking about top Facebook publishers and top Twitter publishers. Really interesting information, things like the fact that BuzzFeed is the top Facebook news publisher, on Twitter it's the BBC. And I think this finally, Sarah, answers my question. Remember I used to say that I felt like the content on Facebook was a little more sensational sometimes, and Twitter I felt like it was more reliable. When I look at this list on slide 15, this all makes sense to me, because generally speaking, when you look at the social news content leaders that are part of the top Facebook companies that are generating content on that site, you see things like BuzzFeed, Daily Mail, Fox News. So it's a different type of content than when you get over to the Twitter news publishers, and it becomes more in the New York Times, BBC, and The Guardian.
It's funny, it's getting to the point now on Facebook, and I know Facebook is trying to change this. They're really trying to pull a lot of that kind of, not just BuzzFeed, but that those sort of viral videos that we're all starting to feel like, oh yeah, you know, it's clickbait. They're trying to bury some of that off of their newsfeed, so it's taken a little bit more seriously as a news source. But I've even gotten to the point where on Facebook the way that something is written as a headline, where, you know, this woman fell, but you'll never guess what she did next to make the crowd love her. There's a certain style where I think people are feeling a lot of fatigue, and that's why Facebook wants to change it. Another, you know, one of her internet trends really was the idea that, you know, everybody knows that we're going towards a mobile future, but that mobile is skyrocketing in usage. When the number of people using the internet, as far as growth is concerned, is slowing, whether that's, you know, desktop or mobile, it's you know, people using smartphones, that, you know, we're just getting to this, you know, finite number of people on Earth, but that the data that people are consuming via mobile is just going up at a crazy pace, and also that people are using tablets at a much more engaged rate than they started using PCs. Even if you just kind of look at everything in graph form, it's an interesting way to look at it. So you think, gosh, I mean, what is this going to look like in 10 years? Because either growth really speaks for itself.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this impacts the way all of us who are content creators, and I think a lot of people who listen and watch the show are content creators. It changes the type of content that we should be creating, and whether it's the length of the content, you know, knowing more and more people are watching that content on mobile devices. I mean, look at what Stampy just told us about the percentage of people watching on tablets, around 50% of his audience watching his YouTube videos on a tablet, and you just see that the nature of the content will all also change along with that. So there are so many slides within this report that are really interesting, and I love that she looks at it at such a detailed view, and it's so in depth. And I think we don't really see some of these reports, and she seems to be kind of the one who's really nailed it year after year.
Yeah, people really look forward to Mary Meeker's internet trends.
It's like a big day in the internet world.
It really is, and this is data that comes from sources that we could all get the same data from. It's just that Ms. Meeker seems to put so much effort into it and has a really good way of saying, hey, let's look at the big picture here. Everybody says, you know, we're in a tech bubble, for example. Well, let's talk about the last time we were in a bona fide tech bubble, at least in the Silicon Valley, you know, era of dot-coms. And let's look at some numbers. And if you want to compare it to, you know, the year 2000, we're really not. And then you can't really argue with those numbers. Anyway, it's like I said, 146 slides of pure good data goodness, and we'll definitely have the link in our show notes as well.
Yeah, it's a great report. We also have an interesting story in our show notes today about LeVar Burton. And I believe that we've talked about LeVar in the past. And he's probably been on Twitch shows in the past, has he, Sarah?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, he absolutely has. He's been on Twitch, and he might have been on Triangulation. Maybe somebody can let me know if that's true or not.
Anyway, I figured.
Yeah, I interviewed him on G4 some years ago. He was on the Screensavers way back in the day.
Amazing.
I mean, he's a geek. He's definitely been on the scene for a long time. Prolific tweeter.
He sure has. And of course, Reading Rainbow, his very popular television show, which a couple of years ago he took into an app format so people could download the Reading Rainbow app. And it looks like LeVar Burton is now going into the Kickstarter world with a new crowdfunding campaign. He's trying to raise approximately $1 million to take Reading Rainbow to the web. And it looks like he's planning a pretty extensive experience that could, in fact, be sold to schools on a subscription basis every month, where people could dive in, kids could dive into an educational environment. And it would all be focused, of course, on reading. So he just launched the campaign. He has a great little Kickstarter video to go along with it. And I'm sure that if anyone's going to reach his goal, I'd say he has a pretty good chance. The internet loves him.
Yeah. Well, he's past the goal, that's for sure. He wanted to raise $1 million. We're almost at 2 million at this point on the Kickstarter campaign with 33 days to go. This started yesterday? Was it yesterday or 2 days ago?
Yeah, just a couple days ago, I think.
And I will say that anyone within, 10 years, I guess, of my, it's kind of, my age group, give or take 10 years, everyone I know either contributed to this or was spreading the word. And it's amazing because it's not as if we're all talking about, hey, remember how much we loved Reading Rainbow on a regular basis. But once we're reminded of that, no one has anything bad to say about Reading Rainbow. I mean, there have been a couple people who said, I just never really watched it. And the rest of us go, really? That's, how we learn to read. it was really important.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I didn't even look at the Kickstarter page recently, but I didn't realize they were closing in on $2 million.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they hit their goal quickly.
And 33 days to go. So who knows what type of environment this will be at that point.
8-Bit Steve says in our chat room, only one bad thing about it, the theme song. What are you talking about? Who doesn't like the Reading Rainbow theme song?
Oh, he doesn't like it?
To each their own. Yeah, I learned to read from Sesame Street more than Reading Rainbow, but LeVar Burton is just, he's just one of these beloved people who you can tell is doing this because he really likes kids.
Yeah.
And he likes teaching and having fun, and he's fun to watch. He's got a great voice, and then he's got the whole Star Trek connection, which is, he's beloved in for a whole nother generation of people. But I really, I'm excited about this. I think that his heart is absolutely in the right place, and he certainly knows how to get a band of people together and raise some money.
He certainly does. This is an interesting article in the New York Times about making Twitter easier to use, and this may make some people cringe who are avid Twitter users, myself included. Dick Costello was recently quoted as talking about Twitter and how they plan to make it easier to use by basically changing an algorithm in terms of how they would weigh all of your tweets. I mean, right now, every single tweet has equal weight, right? As you tweet, they show up in someone's stream, and that's pretty much it. Unlike how Facebook works, where there is an algorithm in the back end that determines what messages you see on Facebook. I hate the Facebook experience personally. I don't like the way that they do it. I just want to see stuff in terms of the most recent and date added. So I'm not super happy about this. Sarah, what do you think?
I don't like it either. The thing about Twitter is sometimes Twitter can be noisy and sometimes it can be sort of a mess. And I can't always keep up with everything that's being said. But that's my own fault because I'm following enough people that sometimes I just can't keep up with it. I don't like activity to be weighted. And that's the problem that I have with Facebook. That's why half the time I'll be like, is Amber even on Facebook anymore? And then I search for you and I see, oh yeah, you've been posting all over the place. Why didn't I see that in my newsfeed? I don't really know. For whatever reason, Facebook's algorithm just sort of shuffled you out. And that's always bothered me about Facebook because I want to decide if I want to skip past something, or not. And so Twitter's always been good like that. Hey, you know, sometimes one of my friends is just tweeting too much, that sort of thing. Well, fine. I can choose what to do. I'm a big kid. I don't like the idea of Twitter starting to kind of like cream of the crop, rise certain things to the top, especially if, yeah, they're going viral with other people. That's what trending topics are for, which I don't really pay much attention to anyway. When Twitter put together their new profiles, you are allowed to like pin one of what you think is your best tweets to the top of your profile for somebody who goes, I never even bothered to do that because I feel like, well, I don't want to start messing with that. It's just a tweet stream. You know, my most recent one is at the top because that's the way it should be, right? So, yeah. I don't know.
I'm with you. I mean, it feels to me like Twitter. I mean, one of the things that the beauty of the Twitter is that it's always really happening in real time. And like you mentioned, it's the Twitter stream, right? So the idea that they would weight stuff differently, it just kind of bothers me in many different ways. So I hope they don't go forward with this. I mean, even just the headline in the New York Times, I mean, I don't think Twitter really is that difficult to use. I mean, people may not know what type of content to write, but the platform itself could not be easier, right? And the reality is it just works well, and hopefully they don't mess with it too much because it could get annoying.
I think you and I are talking like two Twitter veterans who are afraid of change. As much as, you know, I don't want it to change, but it's like I realize that Twitter knows that we're kind of in for a while. I guess we could go, but it's like they need to grow their user base. That is the number one thing that they need to do because they're going all in on advertising and they need more people to use Twitter in order for Twitter to continue to grow. And the, you know, the syntax bothers people. It confuses people. That's definitely true. I've got all my friends who say, Twitter, it's like very geeky. And I'm like, it isn't. It's so easy. But I realize that it's just, I've been using Twitter for 7 years. So it seems really normal to me. And they really want to bring in these people that for whatever reason haven't joined yet. And I get that. It's just, it's a bummer because I don't really like anytime Twitter starts to introduce things that make it easier for everybody else to understand.
And I think anytime anyone tries to draw in a mass audience, whether it happens on television or if it happens in the technology world through social networks, it just dilutes the entire brand and the entire experience, right? It just never, ever works well. I mean, we see this in TV. Anything that appeals to a mass audience is usually crap. And I can name a number of shows that shall remain unnamed. But the reality is, I think what we're seeing more and more, when you want quality content, a quality experience, maybe you're not going to have a mass audience, right? And, you know, it seems like, you know, if they mess with it, they do risk, I think, losing some people who do like the experience as it is today. So we'll keep an eye on that one and see what happens. But I'm with you, Sarah. Hopefully they don't mess with it.
Yeah. We're just, you know, get off my lawn, you new Twitter users. If you don't get it, you don't belong here. I feel like an old grouchy Twitter user, but but it's the way I feel. All right, let's move on to our social tip of the week. And this is a good one because sometimes I get these notifications, you know, somebody's been fussing around with their LinkedIn profile, and I wonder why they're using LinkedIn all of a sudden. Maybe they're looking for a job.
Yes.
You kind of have to be cognizant of what other people might think of your LinkedIn activity.
Well, it's funny. I did a radio interview yesterday morning, and the segment was all about how to use LinkedIn and some LinkedIn tips to take advantage of the platform. And one of the tips that I had was how to turn off activity feeds. I mean, it was one of five tips, but literally I had people emailing me and tweeting me and saying, thank goodness you showed me where to do that, because they were bothered by that feature. So by default, LinkedIn automatically has it turned on that anytime you update your profile, the masses can see that. And all you have to do is you go into your settings in LinkedIn and you turn off activity broadcast. It's really as easy as that. We have a link that we'll put in the show notes that talks about some other tips for LinkedIn. But this one in particular is particularly important. Sorry, that was too many particulars. For people who are looking for work and you don't want your boss to know. But even like you said, Sarah, just you don't want to annoy people on LinkedIn overall. So I love that you can go in and turn this off. It's really simple to do, and definitely a great thing, I think, for anyone to do if they're on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think it's that whole sort of tipping off the boss thing is, you know, even if that has nothing to do with looking for a job, sometimes it can seem that way. Or, I recently added Tech News Tonight to, you know, my long roster of Twitch shows on LinkedIn, and it obviously sent this notification to a bunch of people to congratulate me on my new job. And most people understood that it wasn't actually a new job, but some people were confused. And they were like, what, did you leave? Oh, my goodness, I didn't know. You know, and it just kind of became this pointless conversation I had to have over and over. And it, I was like, thanks a lot, LinkedIn. Thanks so much.
It's frustrating. It reminds me a little bit, Chris, who is my common-law husband. A few weeks ago, he wasn't really using Facebook all the time, and he went into Facebook and he updated his status, which was, I think he had it as single for many, many years, to in a relationship. And he got this flood of people emailing him, like, are you in a new relationship? Are you just reflecting the relationship you've had with Amber for 7 years? And so you can see how quickly people can jump to conclusions, right?
Yeah.
And it's even worse in an environment where you could potentially lose your job or, like you said, tip off your boss.
Exactly. Not a good... That you don't want, you know, you just got to know what your options are. So this is actually something that I learned as well. So thank you, Amber. We love hearing from all of you. If you have tips and tricks, stuff that you want us to mention on the show, guest ideas, all of that is most welcomed. The Social Hour at twit.tv is how you email us. You can leave us voicemails at 2626-SOCIAL. Or as you saw with our Stampy interview, if you know the guest that's coming up or you see somebody on the show and you want to ask a question or provide feedback live, tweeting at us is always a great way to do it. Amber is really good about watching our tweet stream. At Sarah Lane or at Amber Mac are ways that you can get a hold of us. Yeah, you could tag it Social Hour, I guess, but I think we figured it's almost easiest just to tweet at us directly. You can record a video like what was her name? Leslie? Leslie and Brady did earlier in the show. Thanks again. I hope Brady was happy with Stampy's description of that it takes 2 years to build a big house. But anyway, thanks to everybody for all the feedback week after week. We love you. All right, Amber, let's get ready for your rad or fad. But first, you know, we mentioned Harry's earlier in the show and said, same guys from Warby Parker, because this whole thing sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? Well, our second sponsor happens to be Warby Parker. Warby Parker has made some really, really big changes to the eyewear industry. Prescription glasses, sunglasses. I wear my Warby Parker sunglasses all the time. I left mine in the car or I'd put them on for you because I think they're very attractive. They're made with high-quality materials, the same stuff that you see in a boutique shop. Now, if you've been to one of those recently, I mean, look at these are nice glasses. I mean, these people are, well, they're attractive people, but the glasses only make them more attractive. But if you go in and you want to spend some coin on a nice pair of glasses, something that's well-made, the lenses are good, you know, they're not cheapy, they're polarized, all that good stuff. I mean, you're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Glasses are just really expensive. They're overpriced. And in many cases, they all kind of look the same. Only a few manufacturers, so you've got these kind of like artificially high prices. You know, I bought a pair of glasses a few years ago that were over $300, and I felt stupid, but I didn't know what else to do for something that was really nice. Well, you have a better option, and that's Warby Parker. If you go to warbyparker.com/socialhour, it's kind of a fun thing that you get to do. You can choose 5 pairs of glasses, and then Warby sends those to you so that you can try on. It's kind of like a try-on-at-home little campaign because, of course, something might look good online, but you've got to try it on. Glasses are very personal. You know, they change the way that your face looks, and you want it to change for the better. They include a special frame box that gets sent to you, a prepaid shipping label so that you can return them. And the idea is you can try all the shades on, ask people their opinion. Hey, which one do you like best? Do you like these red frames? Do you like these? Do these frames fit my face? Do they make me look weird? Then you choose the frames you want. Prescription details, if you need a prescription, Warby will take care of that too. And then for every pair of glasses that you purchase, Warby Parker sends a pair to someone in need. They partner with nonprofits like Vision Spring, if you've heard of that. With a low price and a big selection of styles, you can have more Warby Parker glasses to match however you know, you might be feeling that day, rather than that just one pair of expensive $300 glasses that I bought, where I can't possibly afford to buy any other ones for years and years. And, you know, I didn't even really like them that much. I just thought I was supposed to buy expensive glasses. Returns are fine within 30 days, by the way. So if you, for whatever reason, you think, this isn't quite right, that's okay. You can return them for a pair of glasses that you like better. WarbyParker.com/socialhour. Get the free home try-on. and then get 3-day free shipping on your final frame purchase. Once again, Warby Parker, WARBYPARKER.com/social hour. And thanks, Warby Parker, for sponsoring us. All right, Amber, what is our rad or fad today?
Okay, so I have a couple of weddings to go to this summer, which is, I think, pretty common for most people. A lot of weddings take place in the summer months. And I recently came across this article, and I've heard people talking about this as well, the idea of having a social media ban at weddings. So more and more, what the bride and groom are doing is they're saying that, hey, we don't want you to put our precious moments on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. We want to control the entire experience from a media perspective. And they're even going so far as writing on invitations that they would appreciate it if you didn't use social media. So I'm curious, I guess, Sarah, neither one of us are married right now, so it's hard to comment on this. But nonetheless, what would your stance be at this point? I mean, if you were to have a big wedding, would you want people to do something like this?
Well, yeah, it's funny because I'm like, oh, big weddings, my worst nightmare. But, but you know, my first reaction was, oh, they don't want you to be preoccupied. They don't want you to be distracted at their wedding. Mm. They're just trying to make it easier for everybody. Put down your phone. Don't use Instagram. You know, that's just be in the moment. But this is less about that and more about, yeah, we paid a photographer to take nice pictures of us, and we want to be able to share them with you when we're ready, once the wedding is over and we've looked at our proofs. Or, you know, this is a kind of an intimate affair, and we don't want you to post something on Instagram so that that person we didn't invite sees it and kind of rubs it in their face. So it's more of that controlling the experience type thing, and less about like, oh, we have a problem with you holding up a camera phone. And I guess, you know, on some hand you might think, well, that seems a little bit I don't know, you know, you like a controlling person, but I get it. I do. I get why somebody would feel that way. And I feel like, hey, you know, if all goes well, it's your only wedding, so you can kind of do what you want. If somebody said, I would really prefer that you don't put stuff on social media, or at least, you know, maybe not until I've seen it first, I would absolutely respect that. And I wouldn't even think anything weird about it. I'd say, okay.
Yeah, I would respect it too. And I think it does make sense. I belong to this club in Toronto where you're not allowed to take pictures in the club at all, like even in the restaurant. It kind of drives me crazy though when you actually get to the establishment. And I wonder if this would happen at a wedding as well, is that it's, you get it, you know, you respect them, but all of a sudden you have a perfect opportunity for a really great photo. And then it would be, I think, bad if the entire wedding audience was just talking about the fact that, oh no, put your camera away. You know, you're not allowed to take pictures. And it becomes more of a nuisance than anything. And that's where I see some of these policies sometimes when they say no pictures, people talk about it so much, it's like a negative in what should be a beautiful, positive experience. So it's not that I don't get it. I just think in principle, it's very hard to manage that. So you have to be delicate, I think, about how you actually communicate that message to the people attending.
Right. So it doesn't turn into this negative thing. Oh, yeah. Somebody has their phone out. Ooh, you're not supposed to do that. You know, I think it's, there is a balance between this is what I would really prefer because this is my special day and I trust you enough to be able to say that once and then I don't have to say it again. And if I see you taking a photo of, you know, the beautiful mountains, well, I have to trust that you're not going to put something online that I asked you not to. So
yeah, it can be as simple as that, right?
Right.
I mean, I think you can't have those rigid rules. So, I mean, I think, again, back to I'm a member of the Soho House in Toronto, and they have a bunch of clubs all over the place. And I don't go that often. But when I do go, I just had an experience yesterday where friends met me for lunch, and they were from out of town. And my friend wanted to take a picture of the buffet. And I'm kind of like, oh, you're not supposed to really take pictures, but it's pictures of food. And then you realize, what a ridiculous rule, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the rule has no context. And that, in that sense, I feel like, you know what, you say to people, hey, use your best judgment. This is why I don't want it. Maybe you don't even write it on the invitation, but it's something that you communicate somehow to people, right, in a different way. So it's kind of a weird rat or fad thing because I think it's hard to put into those categories.
Right.
But I'm wondering if the social media ban is more of a fad right now, if people saying, hey, we don't want that there, and it will kind of die off as hopefully you just trust the people attending your wedding.
I don't know. I mean, I think probably this is something that will – I don't know that it'll go away. I don't know, unless we all just get so used to the fact that everything's online and maybe there's an unflattering photo of you in your wedding dress that you spent, you know, your life savings on. I can see where somebody would get a little miffed about that. Like, hey, this is, you know, this is my big party that I threw, and, you know, I wanted it, you know, I wanted the plates to look a certain way, and the colors, and the flowers, and you know, I've put all these people together, and it, you know, it's one of those experiences that people put not just a lot of money into, but just a lot of effort into how it looks and feels. So in that sense, I can see that this would continue to be a thing. Maybe the... maybe the fad part is that we're all just kind of getting used to hearing that. Like, oh,
yeah,
okay, we're not allowed to be social on social media right now. Maybe we all get more used to that, and it's a, this is a non-social type of a thing. Okay, got it. Not a problem. You know, like just needing to wear your shoes into a restaurant or something. It's like, that's just the sort of thing that you have to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, just another reminder, I think, why I'll never get married and have a big wedding.
Right.
From the plates to the invitations to all this stuff, it seems like a giant headache.
Go down to the courthouse, just, you know, make it take an hour of your day. It's all good. You know, you have a nice casual party later. Everybody can wear flip-flops and eat hamburgers. I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. Well, on that note, that is the end of our social hour of the week. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. Reminder that for anybody who wants to watch us live, we are on Thursdays, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Amber and I are our remote hosts. But we, you know, we try to cover both ends of the, at least, Eastern and Western time zones. Amber, do you have anything exciting and interesting coming up in the next week?
Not so much. I'm going to Prince Edward Island. I have a speaking event there on Monday, and I'm from there, so I get to see my family. So that's kind of exciting, even if it's just for a day. And I think I'm going to try to book a Pinterest expert to come on the show next Thursday, since we've had a good run, Vine to YouTube, and I'll find someone on Pinterest, Sarah. So if anyone has any suggestions, please let me know, and we'll keep it up so people can learn from all these people doing amazing things in the social world.
Excellent. Yeah, and anybody who's joining in a little bit late in the show, we had a really big YouTube star, Stampy, YouTube/Minecraft, I guess you would say, star. Mm-hmm. So if you missed that interview, do watch it again. Such a cool dude. And thanks everybody who tuned in just to see him. Maybe we got some new younger audience members today. But until next week, have a great one. And until then, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.